Centered Podcast Audio Experience, blah, 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 blah. How are you guys doing? I'm back. It's been a while. This is the last time I'm going to say it's been a while. I promise you guys this. The last time I'm going to say it's been a while because I've done the impossible. I've finally nailed down an honest to God podcast schedule. My producer, which is me, sat down with me and said, "Rais, you gotta figure out how you want to navigate this podcast." And I found it. Where are my manners? How are you guys doing? Let's do some checking in. Let me lead the way by telling you guys how I'm doing. Phenomenal. No, I'm kidding. I'm doing okay though. I'm doing okay. I can't complain. The reason why I'm doing okay is because I finally have concretely narrowed down the first quarter of 2022. How I'm going to operate the first quarter of 2022. And I got an email from a listener the other week who asked me, how do I structure my years? And I'm going to give you guys a little cheat code. That's how I structure my years. That's how I get things done. That's how I stay efficient. I structure my life in quarters, and I do my scheduling a quarter in advance. So as we are in the fourth quarter of 2021, I'm scheduling the first quarter of 2022. Certain companies, certain Fortune 500 companies schedule at least 2 to 3 quarters in advance. However, what I like to do, because I am one man, I just schedule a quarter in advance. So I got my January to April already mapped out. My January to April of 2022 is already mapped out. The ideas, concepts, and business plans that I have narrowed down, I already have that execution down, right? I already know how I'm going to execute. And this podcast is a large part of me figuring that whole thing out. I know how I want to mobilize and give inside of this podcast, because for me, I think I've said this 1,000 times. This podcast is just something that it's actually more therapy for me than it is for business purposes, right? I don't really care to monetize this podcast, right? I just care to reach as many people as I can. Hopefully I can help as many people as I can help through the dialogues that I present, give some semblance of value. And then, because you guys give incredible value to me, you know, the immense amount of feedback that I receive from you all really helps me figure out how I want to approach the next transmission. And the reason why I call it transmission is because it's going thought to thought. We are transferring and transmitting ideas mind to mind. And so it's very helpful for me to create an open dialogue in this regard. And for those of you who don't know, if this is your first time listening to the Being Centered podcast, we just talk. I do 2 podcasts a week. I do the Being Centered transmission, proper transmissions, on Wednesdays. And then I do the Sunday specials on Sunday. The Sunday specials are more so like a monologue, and the transmissions are free flowing, free form dialogue and discussion. A lot of the things that I have on my brain, this is a no teleprompter. Teleprompter free discussion. The most I do sometimes is take notes, but I take notes throughout the week to figure out what I want to talk about when I hit the microphone. And other than that, it's just me, a mic, and you guys, and my thoughts. There's a little bit of a structure here. Like, for example, today I know exactly what I want to talk about. I know exactly what I want to talk about, and boy, some of you guys might click off. Some of you guys might click off because I'm going to talk about this like a fanboy. Like a fanboy. I'm surprised at how many of you guys sat through the me talk about Batman for an hour. I really sat there and spoke about the philosophical consistencies of Batman, which is pretty mind-blowing if you ask me. If you haven't listened to that episode, go ahead and listen to that episode. I can't listen to myself. As vain and narcissistic as I may sound And as confident as I may appear on this podcast, I really cannot listen to myself. I cannot listen to these things back. I try to, but I cringe when I listen to it back. So I tend to just, and maybe that's why I have such a hard time editing the podcast. That's another thing that I've been, that I formalized, which is why I'm ready to get into a steady groove and a steady schedule of these things. I perfected my setup, right? Pretty soon I'm going to get a camera so you guys can see how I operate. But I finally perfected my setup. I perfected how I want my microphone to be. Yes, I am that particular and specific. I perfected how I want my microphone to be. I've ordered a new mic. Shout out to LaRussell. He gave me a great suggestion. And so, you know, I just need things perfect so I can be comfortable inside of this space so I can give you guys the most consistent content possible. And so I can give myself the most consistent therapy possible, because this to me is therapy nonetheless. There are things that are on my brain that bog me down. And it's like, yo, I have the wherewithal to just get on this microphone and talk about it. So why not, right? So as of right now, I have my water here ready, handy dandy. Actually, let me pour me up a glass. If you guys aren't drinking anything, if you guys are just listening to me, I pouring up this water. You know what I've actually been trying to do as of late is stabilize my diet. That's honestly the thing that causes me the most discomfort, is I have a unstable diet. And I don't want to sound like an X-Men, but I really don't need to eat. Right? I wish I didn't have to eat and sleep so I can get more things done. Unfortunately, I'm that guy. But I'm trying to eat. I'm trying to go back to eating 3 meals a day. I work out every day. I wake up at 6:45. That's how I start my day. I'm actually trying to push that up to 5:45 so I can get more things done. And have a sleep / bedtime at around 10:30 to 11. But yeah, what am I talking about? Let's get to the important matters. There's a couple of things that I want to talk about, right? Primarily, I want to talk about Certified Lover Boy. Yes, I imagine nobody thought this is what I wanted to talk about on this episode. I want to talk about Drake's recent album, Certified Lover Boy. And then I want to talk about James Bond's recent film, No Time to Die. And then last but not least, as promised, I want to talk about attention. Like I've promised in the past, I want to make this episode about attention. And hopefully by the end of this, you guys will see the connective tissue between all of these ideas, right? I'm giving you guys a little bit of the blueprint of how these things work, right? Sometimes I like to have three unrelated ideas, and by the end of it, you guys, if you listen to it enough, you'll find the connective tissue, right? But I'm doing this all off the cuff, right? It's like you watch a comic. They go on stage and they work out material. That's kind of what I'm doing here, right? But in a way that is transparent. And mind you, I'm only saying this for those who are here on the ground level, right? For those who are here on the ground level, seeing how this is the beginning of the transmissions, this is only a transmission number 4. After a while, I'm not going to explain my process anymore. It's just going to be an audio experience. It's just going to be a ride. So, excuse me. So let's start with my main topic here, which is Certified Lover Boy, Drake's recent album. And what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna pull up a track list. Did you guys like the album? First and foremost. I'm seeing a lot of mixed discussions surrounding the album. A lot of people saying it's mid. A lot of people saying it's trash. A lot of people saying it's Drake's most uninspired work. You hear stuff like this all the time. And The reason why we hear stuff like this all the time, specifically from Drake, is because when you're an artist as big as Drake, there are so many boxes that you have to fill in order to give what the masses would deem a great album, right? But Drake did something that I think was unexpected this time around, right? There's actually a couple of things he did that were unexpected. Thing number one that he did that was unexpected was the album cover, right? The album cover was unexpected. It wasn't the type of cover that anybody wanted to see, but we have to ask, well, why? You know, why is this the album cover? And in order for us to understand why this is the album cover, in order for us to even understand why this theme is the album's theme, it all stems back to the 2018 beef with Pusha T. This is where this all stems back to. He is still doing damage control to his image from that moment in hip-hop history. There is the pregnancies of the multiple women because his attention is externally focused on how he's perceived as a father and how he's perceived as a partner. So he's covering, and this is why it's so fascinating when we say, when I see the discourse around this album as him not digging deep enough. Well, what do we expect an artist to do but give their current climate, their current mind frame? And what Drake does incredibly well, whether or not we think it's shallow, vapid, or deep, he's giving his current mind frame. And I think he's giving his current mind frame pretty succinctly in this album. But what Drake did that I think is impressive, and truthfully, this is probably my, I don't want to say this is my favorite Drake album to date, because that is heavy, heavy praise, but Views grew on me. I look at Views, not to be ironic, but I look at Views like Drake's 808s and Heartbreak. Like that is Drake's 808s, right? Where he's making his most experimental project, right? That is an experimental Drake project for sure. You listen closely enough when you have One Dance, Controller, even Are You With Me, that's an experimental hip hop song. Fire and Desire, it's a beautiful song. Faithful, like these songs are on Views are extremely different than the typical, especially when you go to Drake's project prior to that, right? I mean, if you're reading This Is Too Late, it could also be regarded as Drake's most experimental project, because it really did transfer Drake over into this vehicle for the pain that comes with being as successful as Drake is, right? But it also kind of involved this level of street politics getting inside of Drake's lived circumstance, because prior to If You're Reading This Is Too Late, Drake was seen as this PG-13 rapper who was once a child star and was soft. And I always say this when it comes to Drake or any man who does anything. At the end of the day, these are men. You test a man, no matter how tough you think he is, he's going to test back. And for some reason, Drake never been viewed as a tough guy. And you don't have to be viewed as a tough guy to be understood to be a man. Right, but that's a little bit of a digression. So when I listen to Certified Lover Boy, what I hear is Drake giving back to his core fan base. He's given to his core. That's why on the promo that released in January of this year, you had him paying homage to Take Care, So Far Gone, and Nothing Was the Same, because those are the albums that his core fan base, which when you're as big as Drake, you start to believe. When you're watching an artist as big as Drake, you start to doubt if there is a such thing as a core fan base, right? But there is. There is a core fan base. And what Drake did with this album is he gave to his core fan base. But what I've noticed on this album is there's a musical performance. There's a rapping that Drake is doing, just based off the lyrical content alone, that I don't think he's ever said the things that he is saying on this album ever. He's really reflecting about the deep emptiness that he feels inside of himself. And nobody is paying this any mind or attention that this man, this icon, is saying he feels nothing. He feels nothing except for the love of his friends, his son, and his mother. He said his heart feels vacant and lonely on the opening song. The opening song, Champagne Poetry, he says his heart feels vacant and lonely. If Kendrick Lamar said that, he's getting a Pulitzer. He's getting Rap Album of the Year. But when Drake says it, it's like, oh, we want more. We want more stories. He says he feels like his therapist is speaking for him. Like his words aren't his own. And that's just the writing. Just the writing alone is so profoundly honest. That in the same vein, we're asking him to give more, we're not paying attention to what he's actually giving. And what we end up seeing in Certified Lover Boy, which I think is so fascinating, is how he views women. When he released the title for this album, we assumed, many people assumed. I always said that when he releases his album, what I would like it to be is hard-hitting raps. So I wanted it to be an oxymoron or a little bit of irony, to where on the album title, Certified Lover Boy, he's doing his best rapping. And in part, yeah, that's what we received, is his high-level rap acumen. Complemented with that, though, is the understanding that it's not that Drake is a certified lover boy. It's that his version of love is skewed by his success. And I always feel that Drake is so successful that he could find a woman to love him honestly, right? But what are the odds that the woman is going to be a full whole woman for Aubrey Graham and not Drake? And that's the plight that he's articulating in this album, where he's saying the chances of me finding a woman who I love and who loves me is next to impossible, while me being this version of myself. That's why in this album, he's pining after Rihanna the whole thing. See, but you miss this. You truly do miss this if you stay at a... If you start to wonder... if you start to wish where the album could have taken you, right? But if you just listen closely, he's just pining after Rihanna. And I knew this was coming when he was at the Billboard Awards, and I think he received the Artist of the Decade Award, and it was on the screen at the Artist of the Decade in the little montage. There were so many clips of him and Rihanna doing What's My Name and Work and Take Care and all these things. And I'm thinking, like, she's in a happy relationship with A$AP Rockington. The last thing she needs, or ASAP needs, is you receiving the highest honor of the decade, and on the Jumbotron is A$AP Rockington's girlfriend and you. And it goes into the first line of the album on Champagne Poetry when he says, it's the pretty boys versus the petty boys. Who's somebody who calls himself Pretty Flacco? A$AP Rocky. Who's the petty boy? Drake. And then you compound that with the story at the end in Effing Fans. You have him telling the story of how Rihanna and his relationship started to fizzle apart. It's through him having a child. It's through his inability to stay faithful to one of the most desired women in the world, how he lost her, right? Listen to this album really closely. It's about his inability to actually love. He's struggling to love people who aren't his friends that he's grew up with, like love and trust them. And he's also struggling to love women. It's because his focus is on the music. He said, career going well, but the rest of me is fading slowly. My heart feels vacant and lonely. Listen to this album through that lens from the opening track and you understand everything. Closely listen. Closely listen. It's the most scummy Drake raps. The most scummy dirtbag Drake raps I have ever heard. And as a wholesome brother myself, I love it. Because I can't live this life. I am not scummy. I think I'm an honest and wholesome brother. So when I hear this scummy rap from him in Future, she gonna F me for this AP. I live vicariously through that because God knows I will never in my life. But again, this brother's on theme. But for some reason, people are expecting a loving ode to women. That's not what type of time he's on. We should have known that's not the type of time he's on when he had an illegitimate child. And he's saying that to you guys on this album. He's saying that to you on this album. He's saying his honest truth. You think this brother makes a song called Poppy's Home if he's not still living within the shadow of having an illegitimate child? He's still living in that shadow. He's still living in that mind frame. Like, damn, what's the direction that my life took once I had this blessing, for better or for worse? Maybe some people wanted some intimate stories of fatherhood. Like they wanted to see a day between Drake and Adonis written in rap form. But he's giving, you know, broad strokes. Broad strokes. When it comes to writing, I like to think of both in rap and in narrative and in film. I like to use this analogy. Can the person with the pen write the story from the perspective of a molecule of dust in a room with the complete vantage point of everything happening in the given space? Can the writer write from that perspective? Because that's how you give the most detail. If there was a speck of dust in the room watching Drake interact with Adonis, or Drake interact with his mother, or Drake interact with his life, what would the speck of dust say? That's the perspective that a writer must write from, with that level of attention to detail. Then the question goes, did Drake accomplish that? Yes and no. Yes and no. And when I say that this album is made for Drake's core fans, and coupled with that, the impossibility for many of us to fathom that an artist as big as Drake has core fans. But I've been following, like many, this brother's career since Degrassi. So he's writing for those people. And in hindsight now, I actually also think that Scorpion is a classic. And in hindsight, I think Drake does not have a single bad body of work, which is also legendary. Like, even Jay-Z has bad bodies of work, or less than stellar bodies of work. But Drake, he has none. So we also have to applaud him for that. And Certified Lover Boy is another notch inside of that belt of great bodies of work that time will decipher if it's a classic or not. So as I listen to Certified Lover Boy and I hear lines like, "Mama used to be on disability, but gave me this ability, and now she walking with her head high and her back straight." Come on, guys. What are we doing? What are we doing? Anybody out there? Anybody? What are we doing? What are we doing? So now, this goes again back to the molecule of dust, right? Would we rather Drake tell a story of when his mother had a bad back, was handicapped, and he had to nurse her back to health after she slipped and fell down the stairs? Would we rather him make a whole song around that? Or would we just want one potent line with him saying something that honest? And then when I was listening to Certified Lover Boy, and then one of the best songs on there is Pipe Down. My God. It's such a toxic song. It is the most scummy Drake song. But my brother says that is Drake's song cry because of how beautiful it is. But it's such a scummy song. But the reason why it's so beautiful is because it's emotionally honest from a perspective of a man like Drake, where he's saying, "I am incapable of giving you any real kind of love. I give you material possessions because this is what I have for you. How much do I have to give for you to pipe down?" The fact that he's even using the phrase "pipe down" is crazy. But how much do I have to give for you to stop yelling? For you to stop talking this way? For you to calm down? How much? But Drake's unable to realize that it's not what you have to give, it's what you haven't given. And then you start to think, all right, J. Cole, he freestyled over Pipe Down. And inside of his freestyle, he mentions how the stark reality that he's coming in third place to Drake and Kendrick, right? One and two, to me, it's without a shadow of a doubt. Drake is number one, hands down. Kendrick Lamar is number two, and J. Cole is number three. This is me being as objective as possible. I am a massive Kendrick Lamar fan. Massive. Huge. Huge. But Kendrick Lamar, as far as output, as far as cultural significance, as far as dominance, stranglehold, as far as all the metrics that you would say separates a winner from a second place winner, it's Drake. It's close. It's very close, but it's Drake. And then people get into like message and meaning and craft and artistry and all these things. It's close, but it's Drake. And then I had to realize why. And then you start to stratify, right? When you make tiers of rappers, right? You start to stratify. Okay, what makes Drake number one, Kendrick number two, Cole number three in tier A? And then what makes Big Sean, Wale, Lil Baby in tier two, tier B? And then what makes Travis Scott? And these are loose tiers, but you know what I mean? Like, what really is the metric that makes certain artists higher in the public consciousness than others? And I really do think it's the same thing that makes Disney so successful. It's the invocation of similarities as opposed to differences, right? it's the invocation of, when we think about Kendrick, his first album, what do we know? He made a first album loosely based around his relationship with his mother and father in his neighborhood, right? We are molecules of dust on that plane, the first dimension, traveling with Kendrick Lamar up until the fourth, which is time. So we get to understand him on a molecular level. We know his mother, we hear her voice, we hear his father's voice, we understand his neighborhood, we understand his friends. He made an album that connects to the consciousness in a visceral way, because we all have a mother, we all have a father, we all have friends, we all have a neighborhood. We all have childhood experiences. So boom, we're able to understand that rather easily and simply. Then you say Drake. What makes Drake so special? Time spent. We've grown with this brother. We've been on this journey with this brother. And inside of that, we know Dennis Graham. We know Sandra. We know his mother. We know his father on a first name basis. We know where he's from. We know all of his friends. Again, it's that same connected tissue. We know these people. We know the people surrounding them. We feel like we are a part of the journey. And the reason why J. Cole is not in that class is because we don't know much about him. Though Kendrick Lamar is secretive now, his first album was incredibly autobiographical. J. Cole, we know nothing about him. There's a level of emotional candor that is missing. We don't know where his attention lies when it comes to writing rap music. He kind of gives me the Nas and Tupac effect when they write music, where Tupac's songs, sometimes you don't know if they're from his perspective or somebody else, right? Like, Brenda's Got a Baby, great song, thought-provoking record. But that's not Tupac's experience. That's not Tupac didn't have a baby with Brenda, but it's still a great record. Tupac's most vulnerable record is Dear Mama. And there's a reason why it's his most vulnerable record, and it's one of his most popular records, because we know that's of him. We know that's of him. Same reason with Kanye West. This brother, take what you want. I'm even getting chills just thinking about it. Take what you want from this brother. He just released an album with his mother's first name, Donda. He has the entire world saying his mother's first name. The opening song of that album is a chant of his mother's first name. Donda, 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 Donda. Do you know how revolutionary that is? Just an act by itself? We know so much about this brother. We've known so much about this brother since Hey Mama. We've known so much about his relationship with his mother. Come on. But for J. Cole, that level of introspection when it comes to giving the listener access to your life isn't there. It just isn't there. Because what human beings need in order to be attached to a person is narrative. And what I mean by the Disney method is that what all Disney movies, especially the one in the 90s, the reason why Lion King, Mulan, Tarzan, Little Mermaid, Pocahontas, all of these movies resonate so deeply in the psychological matrix of us from that generation is because they dealt with the loss of a parent. They dealt with what it means to be a child of a parent. They really put that inside of our consciousness to make us think, oh, how would it be? As a child, we start to think about these things, and that's why they grip us until we're an adult. How would it be if I lost my dad? How would it be? How would it be if I lost both of my parents? Even go as far back to Bambi. How would it be if I lost my mother? See, it's these questions, the simple things that make us human beings, that connect us all. These are the things that parlay into longevity and success when it comes to art, storytelling, music. Show us your family, show us your life. And it may be asking a little too much. And I think that's what we're asking of Drake with this album. We're asking for more than he's given. but he's giving a lot. He's giving a lot. We just have to listen closely, which is why I think it's his most, it's one of his best bodies of work, truly. Truly, it is one of his best bodies of work. There's only like two songs on there that I really don't like. They're not that I don't like them, but I can live without them. That's I Miss You Too with Kid Cudi. I can live without that song. That is not the Kid Cudi and Drake song I was expecting, and Way Too Sexy. Those two songs I can live without, but the rest of the album is pretty phenomenal. Like, get along better with your friends. That is the most beautifully harmonized toxic songs I've ever heard in my life. Let me just read you guys the album description, because I love reading album descriptions. What this brother says is a combination of toxic masculinity and acceptance of truth, which is inevitably heartbreaking. That's all you need to see. That's all you need to see. And then you instantly get the tone of the album. It seems right on brand. I love this album. And it's funny to see people have deep issues with it, expecting more, wanting more. But I think it's a phenomenal body of work, truly. I enjoy it. I enjoy the rapping. I enjoy songs like No Friends in the Industry, which also play on to Drake's inability to love and how much love he requires from his friends and family. Like, for example, let's ask this question. Drake is an only child, right? Has anybody ever bothered to ask him in an interview why his friends matter to him so much? It's because he's the only child. Right? That's why betrayal, that's why attention is his oxygen in a lot of ways. That's why betrayal of a friend hurts and cuts deep, because he didn't have siblings growing up. So when he creates and has the wealth to build an enterprise with his friends, they become like family to him, and their love means so much. That's why he talks about betrayal so much, and ops, and no friends in the industry. Because, yo, I didn't have any brothers or sisters. So he really does cherish friends. See, I have a brother, right? I grew up with a brother, 4 years older than me. My friends are additions, not necessities. Because I know I always have one person who we both feel obligated to be our friends no matter what. I am obligated to be there for him, and he is obligated to be there for me because of our blood, because of our kinship. So, but when you're only child, number one, you have problems sharing. Just doing a psychological deep dive. You have problems sharing, and you love attention. Those are the negative qualities. But the positive is you are giving to those who become your friends. So it's a trade-off. It's a psychological trade-off. But we don't look at... we really have to think about the artists when we dissect their projects and their offerings. We have to really think heavily about these artists. And I found the same thing in James Bond's No Time to Die. Right? It's the same theme. The same theme. I think this this James Bond film was directed by Cary Fukunaga, director of season one of True Detective, one of the greatest single seasons of television ever. If you have not seen season one of True Detective, I highly recommend you go out and watch it. It's on HBO still to this day. One of the greatest seasons of television ever. But this James Bond movie was similar in that regard, where it's asking a fundamental question about what it means to be a man. And the fundamental question about what it means to be a man is, when the lights go off and it's my time to settle down, My main concern is that I have somebody who will sing about me. I have somebody who will think lovingly about my time here. Are we as men just our career, just our purpose? And can the dimension of love, receiving it and giving it, help evolve our capacity of masculinity? I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but I will say this. What this movie does well is it does something what I think most movies struggle to do, which is put the character through the toughest thing you can possibly imagine. That's what a story is. When you write a character, you take their life and you make them suffer. Just like reality, you make them suffer. What is the toughest thing you can make this character stomach? And can you think of a way for them to get out of it? And that's what this James Bond film did well. It made James Bond suffer. James Bond suffers in a lot of these. What I like about the Daniel Craig James Bonds is it's the first time that there's a story arc, right? When these movies start, James 007 is a brash young man who has to figure out how to become a spy. He has to learn the skills of the trade, to not be so destructive, to be more sleuth-like, to be more slick. It's the becoming of James Bond as much as James Bond being James Bond. But this is the first time also that we see being James Bond is taking a toll on the mental state of 007. That is a different experience. That's a different experience. That is an enjoyable experience. That is a character molding experience, because we start to ask, what is the main character missing? And is he aware of what he's missing? And it's something that we all need to ask ourselves due to the thing that we are paying attention to. What are we missing? And are we aware that through what we are paying attention to, we are actively engaging in an overt yearning for something much deeper? I never get to understand when men and women alike like something just because they think it's cool. You don't like something because you think it's cool. Like, the things that you're interested in, you don't choose them. It chooses you. Ideas choose people to inhabit them and execute them. Right? Do we understand that as a people? How do I want to put this? So when we talk about what amuses us, you know, we have the muses in Greek mythology, for example, right? There are 9 muses in Greek mythology. There's Calliope, the muse of epic poetry. There's Clio, the muse of history. There's Erato, the muse of love poetry. There's Euterpe, the muse of music. There's Melpomene, the muse of tragedy. There's Polymnia, the muse of sacred poetry. See, and the muses were considered a source of inspiration, goddesses of inspirations. And if I may be wrong about this, but I think I said in another podcast that what you pay attention to becomes your God. No, I said this on the Sunday special, the last Sunday special, education versus entertainment. I said what you pay attention to becomes your God. And the reason why I said this is because our eyes are powerful mechanisms for change. We are seeing creatures for a reason. We've evolved on two legs for this specific reason, so we can pay attention to our surroundings. Us and predatory birds are the only creatures that use our eyes to navigate reality. Because what we see dictates our future, our aims. That's why when somebody has no purpose or they're wasting their life, we develop the phrase, he's aimless. You have to set up an aim. Because when you set up an aim, you find a God. I was actually reading, Mesopotamian's creation myth, the Enuma Elish. And what I found in the Enuma Elish was the conception of their patron god, Marduk. And so what Marduk represents to the Enuma Elish is what probably can be conceived as what Jesus represents to Christianity, right? He brought order to a chaotic existence. And what Marduk did was he brought order to the cosmos, freeing the people, the gods of the Enuma Elish, from the chaotic hold of the mother goddess Tiamat. And what I'm going to say here may be a little controversial, so walk with me. Women's energy is characterized by chaos. Masculine energy is characterized by order. And if we don't understand that, a lot of things I say in this podcast for future episodes are going to be a little bit confusing. So masculine energy represented by order. Feminine energy represented by chaos. Neither is good, neither is bad. They just exist. They're like fire, water, wind, earth, lightning. Just elements, okay? But what Marduk ends up doing is he revolutionizes the pantheon of gods by bringing order from the chaotic mother Tiamat, and he structures the society therefrom because he's a perfect balance between masculine and feminine energy. He's born from them, from their union. He is a descendant of theirs, of successful reproduction, time and time again. So after a while, he becomes the perfect god by successful reproduction between masculine and feminine energy. So, but what I'm going to read is this portion. From the beginning, Marduk appeared to be a natural leader. And as soon as Ea, his father, saw his son, his paternal heart filled with gladness. Ea made Marduk a double god, so that he would surpass all the other gods in form and in strength. Four sparkling eyes shone forth from Marduk's face, enabling him to see everything, and four large ears extended outwards, enabling him to hear everything. Whenever Marduk moved his lips, fire blazed forth from his mouth. What does that mean? We see that the ancient Mesopotamians were able to dial in on something about attention. Four ears, four eyes. The thing that we pay attention to becomes our God because we hear, we take in. And because we see, we take in. We become foster parents of ideology. Based upon how long we pay attention to them. We pay attention. We vote with our eyes and ears. There's also this concept of where genius comes from. Because it's funny how as time progresses, words tend to change and shift meaning. The etymology of genius is the same root of genie, right? Like a wish granter, you know, where that mythology comes from. You rub the lamp and out comes a genie and he's going to grant you three wishes. That's where genius comes from. Because genius comes from the Latin, which insinuates that this is what the belief was. When a human being was born, a spirit or an attendant was born along with every human being. A genius was born alongside every human being. A natural ability. And it's only today that we change the idea of genius into being something done with an exceptional quality to it. So we remove genius from an every man conception into a exemplary conception. And not only in those days was genius present within every man, it was also fleeting. It was also like the muses. You ever heard somebody say, "She's my muse"? He's my muse. It's where I draw my inspiration from. It's where I get my creativity from. They're a source of, they're my engine, they're my fuel. But the old conception of the word genius was that it is fleeting inherently. We are all born with it, but it will leave us, and we have to capture it again and again. We have to capture genius. We are not geniuses. We have to go out there and seek it, like the muses, like attention. But the second conception of genie and genius is that there's a level of wish fulfillment that the mastery of genius possesses, right? By harnessing genius, by mastering genius, your wishes are able to come true. And I find that so poetic. We master our ability of genius through what we pay attention to, not by merely existing, not by merely waiting, but by what we are adhering to. That is genius. That is the luxury of being a human being. I usually, if I do any type of prep for this podcast, it usually has to do with starting with a question. Right, I start with a question, something that's on my brain. And I do this with every conversation that I have with people in general, right? I don't have the answers of life, but I seek out the answers. I'm trying to understand every day what it means to be alive. And when I talk to people, I look at that as a privilege to get to the bottom of this existence, because I don't have the answers, and I imagine you don't have the answers either. However, what I pay attention to primarily are the unifying qualities, the human aspect of when we give our art or when we give our heart. What are we doing when we engage in delivering an album, when we're trying to tell a story through music, when we're trying to tell a story through film, and we're trying to tell a story to our friends and family, when we're sitting down and trying to tell our loved one about the day that we had at work, whether it was a blessing or whether it was difficult, we're telling a story where we're the central figure. We're sharing our minds. And therein lies a little bit of difficulty, right? Because we can be judged on how effective our delivery is. Did we manage to get across all the aspects and angles that we wanted to? For some people, it's always going to be no. For other people, we just have to listen closely enough, and we are gifted with the understanding of knowing exactly where we are in our lives based upon how closely we pay attention to someone else's life, or able to just be empathetic to where someone else is in their life without saying we want more. Give us more. I'd like to thank you guys for sitting with me for this hour. It's been my privilege, truly. You guys have done me a great service.
Ladies and gentlemen.
If you guys have any questions, please feel free to send me an email. It's attached somewhere, wherever you're listening to this. Text. I'd love to continue dialogue.
I did my shit, but I was terrified.
I'm hoping I'm here. I'm ready.
You scared to live or you scared to die? You scared to fail or you scared to try? Run from it all, but I chase the high. Pop said it's gonna come, it just takes some time. Now we here in this real life. Hard to explain what it feel like. Still independent, what your deal like? Did all the groundwork. Wanna fly, you gotta leave the ground first. Surgeon cut me open and they found dirt. Got it out the mud, dog. Did it for the free, we call that love, dog. Lancey Bo my bro like we blood, dog. Still pick the line up every time my blood call. Just because I'm up don't mean I'm above, dog. See me outside, dap me up and get a hug, dog. I got all these flows and they own them like a rug, dog. Easier to smile, you look ugly when you mug, dog. Big dog, but I got love for the pugs, dog. Take a look at everything you come to. When it's hard to walk, who can you run to? When it's hard to talk, who gon' listen? Who show up for you and who go missing? Took this shit so far, they say I'm distant. Told them I'm a god and they turned Christian. I remember times they wouldn't listen. Thankfully, I'm blinded by the vision. Yeah, it's hard to smile when you feel dead inside. Yeah, feed the birds and put some bread aside. Hey, you scared to live or you scared to die? Hey, you scared to fail or you scared to try? Tell me. Yeah, it's different. Wow. So, got the dope, bring the...